Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Wednesday, by the way, May 20th. Can you believe we're almost, we're a third of the way through, or two-thirds of the way through May. May 20th, 2020. That's 5-20-20-20. Interesting, nonetheless. Folks, this is where truth can't be silenced. We're not going to be silenced, no matter what the big tech conglomerates do. No matter who squeals, who cries out in pain, we will not be silenced. I want to thank, by the way, Craig Sawyer for appearing yesterday. If you didn't see that episode yesterday, that broadcast yesterday, please tune in. It's on Brighteon, too. That segment's on Brighteon. It's edited down to about 49, about 50 minutes. And it's really good. Contraland is out. I would urge everyone to watch Contraland. ContraLandMovie.com and share it. All right. My goal is 100,000 views and shares in 72 hours. And I mean that. I think we can do that. I think that the truth about what's really taking place needs to be told. And that does a very good job of doing exactly that. Some of the headlines, of course, that we're looking at. Did you know there was a poll taken? And I thought this was interesting. It's not really hard news. It's kind of soft news, but there's a poll taken that the leftists of this country actually described as Democrats are more worried and lonely, less happy than the people on the right. Just saying. And I looked at that and I thought, well, maybe this is why they need to assert or attempt to assert control, because of their unhappiness. It really must be hell to live in that kind of state of mind where you're not happy, you're not content, regardless of your station in life. It must be really, really hell. And I believe that. And especially if you adhere to the pro-murderous ideology and what have you. You know, all of these things, they all comprise the leftist mentality, which I really believe, when you get into it, it almost borders on, I don't want to say insanity, but it certainly borders, it opens oneself up for that type of, attitude, I suppose. I'll just leave it at that. And there was another poll, speaking of polls, and I am in full agreement with this. The majority of Americans, almost 80% of Americans, are willing to pay more for products that are made here in the United States, or more accurately, not made in China. All right, but specifically made in the United States. So the majority of people among us are more willing to pay a little more for products that are made in the United States, well, not made in China. All right, period. And I think that's pretty important for people to understand. Meanwhile, of course, we have all of this Communist Chinese Party virus news, and it's not really the virus, although there is news about that. It's the response to the virus. Speaking of the news about the virus, and this is important, Stanford University came out with a study. This was just recently released. The study suggests that the coronavirus might not be as deadly as the normal seasonal flu. All of their estimates are much lower than the figures shown about a couple of months ago. And there was an article written in the Spectator. It's Spectator, I believe, .us, where you can find this particular study and the information about that. Other news, not coronavirus or COVID or SARS-CoV or SARS-CoV-2, whatever you want to call it, simply put, the Communist Chinese Party virus or the Kung Flu. That's right. Oh, you can't say that. What states can't we say that in? The Kung Flu? My goodness. You might get fined, slapped on the wrist, slapped around. Go ahead and tell me I can't say that. Go ahead. Tell me I can't say Kung Flu. They've already said you can't really say Communist Chinese Party virus because that's racist. That has racial undertones. It's a hate crime almost. Where was I going with that? I kind of got off. Oh, aside from that, some interesting things are taking place with respect to some newly declassified emails, one in particular. And I don't know how many people saw this. Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch, there was a newly declassified Susan Rice email, which proves that Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was targeted, specifically targeted, in Obama Oval Office meeting with none other than James Comey. And this is a part of that CYA email that Susan Rice sent to herself. You remember that? The Senate Government Affairs Committee Chairman Ron Johnson wrote a letter to U.S. Attorney General Barr this week and requested that he declassify the remaining portion of Susan Rice email of January 20th, 2017 to herself about that secret Oval Office meeting. Do you remember that? With the coup cabal. Oh, this is good, actually. He writes, I request that you review and declassify the remaining portion of Ambassador Rice's January 20th, 2017 email and provide it to my office. Well, acting DNI, Richard Grinnell, I like this guy. I really do. Tuesday, the following day, declassified the remaining portion of Rice's email. Now, Sarah Carter reported on this, the Gateway Pundit, and so on. But the Ambassador Rice appears to have used this email to document a January 5th, 2017 Oval Office meeting between President Obama, the former FBI Director James Cornstalk Comey, and former Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates regarding Russian interference. You'll remember that, I'm sure. It was a CYA kind of email. Hey, we did everything by the book. Well, it's when one looks at this and one looks at the declassified portion, it does read as if this was, to our great surprise, a targeted situation against President Trump and the incoming presidential administration. Now, if you look at Tom Fitton's Twitter feed, you can see that Tom Fitton tweeted copies of the email first shared by CBS investigative journalist Catherine Herridge. Now CBS, she was at Fox, now she's with CBS, saying that General Flynn the way this is worded, I've got a problem with. Here's what the tweet said. General Flynn targeted in Obama Oval Office meeting with Comey! President Donald Trump should appoint a special counsel to investigate this seditious conspiracy. Now, I agree with all of that, except where have we, and I agree with the fact that there should be DOJ involvement, and I do believe there should be arrests, indictments, investigations leading to indictments and arrests. But the fact of the matter is, you heard what Barr stated. Now, some people have been parsing that, and I've gotten emails about that, and I've seen comments about that, video that I played about by Bill Barr. But the fact of the matter is this. I don't see any high-profile arrests coming from the activities, the seditious activities that took place in the Oval Office. And we know those were seditious activities. We know that there was a cabal out to stop President Trump before he was president as a citizen, during his candidacy to tank that, and then subsequent to him becoming president, being elected president, to muddy the waters there and to get him out of office. And they tried numerous ways. So the reason I mentioned these items coming out of the gate, you've got the coup attempt by the left, obviously, right? Since 2016, really before, as soon as President Trump descended that escalator, the coup began, the process began, that involved Obama, that involved the highest levels of our intelligence agencies. So we saw that, and we saw multiple attempts, whether it was the Russian, the Steele dossier, which was a creation by Hillary Clinton and the DNC and others, whether it was the Russian hoax, which that was the dossier prompted the Russian hoax in general, then the Ukrainian hoax. Between the Ukrainian hoax and the Russian hoax, there was the Mueller investigation. So all of these parties and all of these events were to take down President Trump. And this was an assault on our constitutional republic. Now we've seen what? The strongest aspect of President Trump's tenure, his presidency, has been what he's done for the United States economy. Now, look, I understand you're looking at a fiat currency. You're looking at a Federal Reserve system. I understand all of that. But if he's the guy sitting in the Oval Office and he has to play the cards that are dealt to him, given the fact that you know, he's playing in that arena, in that venue. So he's got to play those cards. Now, he's free, I'm sure, to, I know he could systematically bring us back into a proper currency, into a proper national currency. But in the meantime, all right, playing the cards that he was dealt, he worked the economy and made the economy numerically, statistically stronger than it was before. Some of the numbers you could say, well, they're just made up numbers. And I believe a lot of this as well. When you look at unemployment numbers, you look at the consumer price index, all of these numbers that you and I depend upon in our daily lives or affect us, you know the numbers are non-inclusive of certain items. You know that the numbers are massaged and managed depending on what your agenda is. The numbers are made to look better or worse, again, dependent upon the agenda. So the reason I bring this up, all of these, what do all of these things have in common? I contend that it is our constitutional republic that is the target. It is you and me. We are the targets of the permanent bureaucracy, the deep state, the authoritarians. I want to be clear on that. We are scheduled for destruction by this, I don't want to say elite. They might think they're elite, but by this despicable cabal of communists or individuals with communist ideologies and leanings and biases and beliefs, along with the Islamic component, which really works well with the communist aspect of things. And the individuals who are pushing for the green agenda, the new Green Deal, which is a communist platform anyway. So all of this combined, what does this have in common? It's the destruction of our republic. And what's the best way to do it? To kill us, obviously. Kill us off because we're archaic, we're obsolete, but it's to destroy our Constitution. And we see that too. And I mentioned about Susan Rice and everything. when there's no justice, when we don't see justice, or we see a multi-tiered justice system where, hey, Susan Rice can get away with whatever, Hillary Clinton can get away with whatever, and we can't, we'd be in jail for the rest of our lives. When Roger Stone is being tossed in jail, and others who have done worse are not, we've lost our country in terms of our justice system. And we don't have a justice system anymore. We don't have a system of justice. We have a legal system. Remember, the legal system has been weaponized. And I'm talking about the criminal legal system has been weaponized against us. But I'm also talking about the civil justice system. It has been weaponized. And I'm here to tell you that I personally, and Steve Quayle, I mean, we bear witness to that fact, that the legal system has been weaponized. You want to get somebody to, if you go after somebody that is weaker, perhaps, hey, you can bankrupt them. You can drive them insane through the weaponization of the legal system. And we're seeing that more and more today. It ruins people's reputations. It's distracting. It diverts resources, on and on and on. So all of this, the common thread here is really really saving the Constitution, which, by the way, I just happen to have a copy of that book right here, Saving the Constitution. This by Dr. Richard Proctor. If you go to provisinstitute.com, my guest on Wednesdays is Dr. Richard Proctor, and I've got a special treat for you today. Saving the Constitution is the book to read. It is the book to get. It is the book to give out as well. Don't just buy one copy, buy two, and give a copy to, your sheriff, your chief of police, your pastor, your husband, your wife, whatever, your minister, but get it out there, Saving the Constitution at provisinstitute.com. With me, before I bring Dr. Proctor on, you know, I want to do something a little bit different today. A great patriot up in the New England area is a gentleman by the name of Kevin Fahey. And I want to bring him on to Ride Shotgun with me with Dr. Proctor. And the reason being is that he's got, you know, look, he's been out along with Matt and other people from New Hampshire talking about attending rallies, constitutional rallies, open the country back up, stop this madness. So there are some, given his time with the other patriots, he is kind of a mouthpiece for the patriots, and not speaking for them, but asking questions on their behalf about things that Dr. Proctor knows about. So I wanted him to kind of come in and ride shotgun with me as we talk to Dr. Proctor. Kevin Fahey, are you there, and how are you? Is this thing on?
Hello, Doug. I am here.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Again, excellent. Hi. How are you doing today?
I have to do hand signs. Good. How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you for having me on the program. And I just want to say hi to the whole Hagman audience. It's a pleasure being with you today.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And as I said, I asked you to come on and kind of ride shotgun with me because you're out there among the patriots who are going against, or not going against, but are bringing notice to the tyranny that we are experiencing you've been out there with patriots at the state houses. And so since we can't have, 500 or 1,000 people on all at once, I figured, hey, why not have you come on and kind of speak to the patriots with questions from the patriots with Dr. Proctor. So is that okay?
Sounds awesome to me. Yep, absolutely. Right. Honored to be with both of you.
All right. Now, of course, it is my pleasure, distinct honor, as usual, on Wednesday, although I apologize because Dr. Proctor, I took some of your time and I apologize, but I wanted to get the proper introduction for today's show. Dr. Proctor from the Provis Institute, provisinstitute.com. How are you, sir? And you look great today. I like that sweater.
Well, that's nice of you to like something.
Well, I don't like much.
You know, I hate to be alongside of you. You look so nice. You do everything so nice, and I'm just a dude here.
I'm just a nobody. Look, nah, we're just, you know what? We're all just dudes. I think Kevin, you a dude? Yeah, you're a dude.
Yep, makes three of us. We just got three dudes here.
All right.
So we're in good company, Richard.
Yes.
I like to be in good company. I like that.
Well, you know, Dr. Proctor, I didn't tell you, I didn't get a chance to tell you before the show, but I wanted Kevin to come on and ride shotgun with me because he's out there, you know, he's out there in among the patriots who are saying, you know what, everything we're seeing is just a mess. And so he's getting a lot of the feedback and, he can kind of discuss, ask the questions that are on people's minds. Hopefully you don't mind if that's all right. If we kind of just have a chat.
No, I don't mind at all. Let's chat. He and I chat on the phone every now and again. I was going to say de vez en cuando, but every now and again we chat on the phone. Yeah, let's chat.
All right. Well, okay, Kevin, I'm going to turn it over to you. And let me ask you this first. Do you have any questions for Dr. Proctor based on your experiences and based on your interactions with other patriots out there? And then we can just start from there.
Well, tell you what, Doug, I'm gonna start it out a little different. Before we get with Richard and this round table we're gonna have, I just wanna personally thank you for bringing Craig Sawyer on yesterday. We haven't seen our brother Craig in a little while, and I was very excited that he had gotten the Contraland film out and released and put it out there free of charge for people to view. And I've spent the morning sending that film out to almost every media contact that I have and different friends around to be able to get it posted up for just to try to get the most traction we can and get that in front of as many eyes as we can. And I want to personally thank Steve Quayle because I sent it over to Steve this morning. I wasn't sure if he saw yesterday's episode and I wanted to make sure that he was alerted to it and knew about it. And that brother had that posted up on stevequayle.com in under 10 minutes. And Steve, if you're listening, I just want to personally thank you for stepping up and doing that for us. So Doug, thank you for bringing Craig on yesterday.
Oh, no problem. Okay. Thank
absolutely.
You.
Very, very important. So Richard, where do you want to take this today, constitutionally speaking? What's on your mind? I figure we'll have a back and forth here and we'll just kind of let it flow and that'd probably be the easiest way to go about. Where would you like to start with this, Richard?
Well, you know, I sent an email to Doug yesterday. I don't think I sent it to you, Kevin. It's about America is headed for the trash can.
Yep.
The trash heap.
Yep,
we are economically being wiped out by these lockouts.
Yes.
It's an absolute horror. I'm going to mention something here just in general. He said, this starts out with, this is by Michael Snyder. He's up in Idaho. Incredibly, we just added more than $1 trillion to our national debt in less than a month. Okay, that's absolutely terrible. On May the 4th, we're about $25 trillion in debt. Well, I went out and I procured the information that I do on these kinds of subjects. Let's just look at this. As of yesterday morning, 8 a.m. on the in Mountain Time, the federal national debt was $25,308,000,000. Okay? The state debt, which nobody ever talks about, was $1,183,000,000. And the local debt, that's nobody ever talks about, was $2,090,000,000. The unfunded liabilities, that's things like Social Security, that we have to pay in the future, $147 trillion. And the personal debt, you know, ours, just you and me, is $20 trillion. Now we always talk about the federal debt, but what about all these other numbers we don't even pay any attention to? $196 trillion is the total debt load we now have. $196 trillion. That's as of 8 o'clock yesterday morning.
Now absolutely amazing.
Now what do we do?
Yeah, yeah. And Doug, now if you if you combine that with the jobs notification that came out last Thursday on unemployment, we're now up over 36 million people out of a job in just the last, what, month and a half to 2 months. 36 million. And that doesn't even include what's going to come out tomorrow for the weekly jobs report. It comes out usually on Thursday morning. And I can almost guarantee you, you're going to be looking at another 3 million people on top of that.
You know, now you point something out of work. What was the number you just mentioned? 300 million? How many?
It was just over 36 million people.
36 million. Let's just assume that each one of those people make $100 a day. That means that we lost out of our economy yesterday alone, 360 million dollars just yesterday. Now multiply that by the month and we're all of a sudden up in the billions, and that's where we are, because that money is not going to be spent. That money is not available. It's not flowing. It's sitting idle. $300 million yesterday alone.
If you add to that, Richard, the fact that, you know, a lot of these people are then going to be going on unemployment, and that comes right out of the taxpayers' coffers, you know, that comes from the government, and that's just even more money that we're spending, but we're spending on something that's not being produced. It's just people sitting idle and not working.
We're sitting in a cycle right now that if we don't break it pretty soon, we won't even have an economy left. I mean, people have got to get out and get back to work. We've got to have the flow of items. We've got to have the flow of money. We've got to have the flow of the economy. We've got to have these things go, not just for one individual, but for the whole group of us. A lot of people, they're not having a problem because they've got their job and it didn't go away. But they will have one when there's no products on the shelves, there's no food in the store, because the people who do those things aren't at work.
Exactly.
You know, gentlemen, if I can ask you guys a question, and thank you, by the way, for this roundtable. I think it's kind of a neat change up. But let me ask Dr. Proctor on this. You had mentioned about the state and city debt and the different levels of debt. I just saw where a small town in Alabama, the city of Fairfield, Alabama, filed for Chapter 9 bankruptcy. That was on yesterday, I guess it was, Tuesday. How does that even work? I mean, what happens? And who? What happens constitutionally?
Well, when you look at a city that goes bankrupt, does that mean that all the people move out? Does that mean that everything stops? Nothing stops. Nothing. Bankruptcy in the focus of a city or a state just really means they're absolving themselves of debts that they should be paying, because they are not going to go away. The mayor's office won't close. The city won't shut down. The fire department won't shut down. The police department won't shut down. All that it really means is that if they owe money to people, they just washed it away. That's what it means. Think about that for a moment. That's what bankruptcy does. But typically, it only affects one or two people. Now, that one will affect a city and all the debtors to that city. This is just some more shenanigans. It's a legal way of getting out from underneath debt that the cities use, but they don't stop business like the rest of us do when we do that. They don't stop business.
So Kevin, thanks for bearing with me here. So Dr. Proctor, if I, let's say I sold the city of Fairfield, Alabama, or not sold, let's say I provided, investigative services to them to make sure that their employees were, you know, doing the right thing. And I invested my entire company assets, time, and let's say they owed me, $250,000 based on a 6-month investigation. So I don't get paid, right? I mean, that's basically what happens.
That's just like any other bankruptcy. That's right. That debt's absolved, stopped, done, finished, over. You lost.
Gotcha.
Not the city.
All right. So then I go belly up. Okay.
Well, but see, that's what happens when government does these things to us. Government is sitting there doing whatever they please, pretending like they're following budgets, pretending like they're doing these things, pretending. But they really aren't. Oh, sometimes they do. They talk about it. They try to keep things under control. I understand that. This is not the general way. But if the state of California goes bankrupt, what's going to happen to California? Is it going to disappear off the map? No. Is the government going to stop and close? No. All that's going to stop and close is the bills that they owe won't be paid. Now, that's really a bad thing.
Now, Richard, I have a question for you. If, let's say a state declares insolvency and they declare bankruptcy, does the unemployment checks stop at that point?
No, they all keep going. Everything keeps happening.
So they can still be issued?
Yeah, they still send money. They still do all the things. Garbage collection. They might not collect that because that would be important to everybody to see. But the stuff still goes on. Hmm. We think, if you or I declared bankruptcy tomorrow, we'd lose our assets. I mean, it's possible we'd lose our home. Depends on whether it's an 11 or a 7 or what we do. We lose our assets. We could be homeless. But when a state or a city or a county declares bankruptcy, all they do is don't pay any bills that they used to owe, and they carry on just like normal. Fire department doesn't shut down. Police department doesn't shut down. They keep getting paid. The unemployment checks that are coming from the state, they'll get paid. Everything will get paid. They'll just borrow it. Whoops. They just went bankrupt, but tomorrow they're going to borrow it again. Folks, that's how government's working. Our government, they say our government went bankrupt in the 30s. Well, it probably did, but it didn't stop. Look where we are today. Are we bankrupt with a $25 trillion debt that can't be paid? Are we bankrupt because we don't have any real money? It's all fiat currency, nothing backing it. Are we bankrupt? If you or I did all those things, we would be bankrupt. But the government's not. The government carries on. Things aren't the same for government and banks as they are for you and I and business. They're not the same. Banks, banks have. There's no reason a bank could ever close. It's just the Federal Reserve wants them closed through the FDIC. They'll do it. But a bank just has an income stream. The liabilities, your liabilities, Kevin, what do you consider your liabilities? Just think for a minute.
Basically, our liabilities, as far as I see it, is anything that we have as a debt that hangs over our head. So
exactly.
A vehicle, let's say my truck, let's say I just bought a truck, I only put a few thousand dollars down, let's say it's a $30,000 truck, that truck, as much as I'd like to see it as an asset, if I owe $27,000 on it, it's a liability to me until it's paid off.
Yes. Now you can divide that to $3,000 of asset and $27,000 of liability. Now let's go to the bank. They have liabilities too. In fact, whenever a bank closes, they always say the liabilities are being assumed by bank XYZ. Okay, that's what they always say. We're going to assume the liabilities. What's a liability to a bank? It's the deposit that the depositors put down. That's the liability. The assets are the loans and the income stream. They have a liability. It's the depositors. They're not going to pay the depositors. No, they're going to move all that depositor money to bank XYZ. That's all that's going to happen. So all the assets, which I consider assets that create the income stream, what I consider profit is not profit to the bank. What I consider liabilities is not liability to a bank. Because
it's the exactly
bank's
the opposite.
Income stream. Yes, it's exactly the opposite. The bank's income stream comes from the liabilities it has. That's amazing. Your income stream doesn't come from your liabilities. It comes from your efforts and your work. Their income stream comes from the liabilities. And some of their income stream, probably most of it, comes from their assets, which are loans. Every bit of their situation winds up being income stream. You and I don't have that opportunity. So banking accounting is different than everybody else's. And when I say they've made profit, they say, no, we didn't make profit. All we got is investment capital. We didn't make any profit. There's no profit. It's investment capital. Well, guys, when you make money on things you're doing, even if you want to call it a rose, it's still a lilac. Okay? I just wanted to say it that way.
Very well stated. And if I may, when I got your email yesterday, I didn't respond to you. And the reason I didn't respond to you, I grabbed your book, Easily Understood Economics. Folks, if you want a wake up call, if you want to understand economics the way, I mean, really understand the economics, Richard Proctor wrote, I don't know if this is your most recent book, but Easily Understood Economics.
That's four books back.
Okay. Thank you. I can't keep up, man. You are okay. A writing machine, but I got to tell you, Easily Understood Economics, it really blew my mind to read. I thought I knew, but I didn't know. And this really set me straight in terms of assets, liabilities, and what's really going on with money in general. So thank you for that. I just wanted to punch that in there. Provis Institute for all the books. Go ahead, Dr. Parker.
Yes, all of the books.
Right.
Oh, and your introduction today with your was it Steve Quayle? Is that who you're talking about? You spoke yesterday? Because I have trouble remembering all the names.
Craig
Sawyer. You and he were talking about this boils down to wanting to destroy our society. The entire Liberty series is on that very subject. The whole series shows all the many, not all, can't ever do all, shows many examples on and on and on, showing patterns of the left, the I don't want to call them the elite either. They call themselves that. I call them the international banking establishment. Their efforts to destroy our republic. That's what the Liberty series is. And I just spent time to make sure you could see it in real life. Things that really happened rather than abstract things, stuff that really happened. Though that whole series is focused on how to destroy our republic. The last book I wrote is How to Save Our Republic. We've got to get back to that Constitution and do it.
Amen.
I get all carried away.
I'm glad you do.
I'll shut up for a minute.
No.
No, Richard, I mean, the thing is I think a lot of people in America don't realize what a target that they have on their back. They just don't. And the opposition has done a very, very good job of keeping people distracted, of dumbing down the educational system over the last 40 years so that people don't realize what America is and represents in the world. America and this system of freedom that we have, that our founding fathers laid out, our God-given rights that were given to us, we're the envy of the world, and we always have been since this country has been created. The freest nation in the world is the one thing that stands in the way of the quote-unquote elite, the international bankers, the New World Order folks from being able to establish their New World Order, their one world government. We are that opposition, and that opposition has to be taken out of the way. Therefore, that puts a target on the back of every American. And what's really scary about it is that people really don't realize that they're in a war for their country. There's a war going on to take our country down, and they're not even aware of it. And I remember Dr. Frank Turek once said that the most dangerous thing to do in a war is to not know that you're in one.
Oh, that would be true. You know, the biggest tool they devised was 1913 when they destroyed our income. They did. They destroyed a half of our income now goes to federal government taxes, that kind of thing. When they destroyed the state's representation, they set up the Federal Reserve System, which is the banking system that I was just talking about. Guys, that year, 1913, is a pivot point that was the beginning of major destruction of our country. And if you want to read an interesting book, I don't know, all books are interesting, but this is one. It's called Philip Drew Administrator, written by Mandel House, who calls himself Colonel, who was the assistant president with Wilson. Those are interesting titles. Mandel House wrote a book called The Philip Drew Administrator. That book outlines a program to take the United States into a socialist environment. And now if you watch what's been going on and you look at the steps of that book and you watch history since that book was published, we're right on target. We did lots of it during the 30s. Our buddy Roosevelt was really on target with that book, and he did lots of it in the 30s. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. He did that. Now we're dividing into regional areas. You know, the Northern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere, the Americas, the European folks, the country called, what's that country called? Europa or something. What's that country called? Europa comes from another book. The EU, the economic, what do they call that European country? Cotton pick. Talk about not
Eurasia, having to Oceania.
No, not that. Just the one that exists today, the EU, European Union.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what I wanted to say. The European Union is a region formed by the One World Order to bring about that part. Bush did a big job trying to bring about the American group to the Americas for that regional area. Asia's working on that kind of thing. China's working on that. In other words, what we're doing is we are working on putting our world into three major groups. By Jove, the prophet George Orwell wrote about that back in the 1950s. Doing it.
Yep.
And he wrote about it, and House wrote about it he wrote that book in 1912. He wrote about that then too. These people, the war we're at war with, are not idle. And they're constantly ridiculing anybody who says anything different. They're constantly pushing everybody aside. They don't want us to know these things. They don't want us to know that they want us to know the new math. The new math doesn't do anything. In fact, I saw a joke today. It came to me. It said, parents, teachers, be aware that when your kids come back to school, they're going to be using old math again because their parents are going to teach them.
And that's right.
Start all over again. Yeah, pardon? Yeah.
I saw that. Well, I think, Richard, I think if you remember in one of the conversations that you and I had over the phone when we talked about George Orwell's works, you and I read anything from Orwell as a warning, and the opposition looks at Orwell's works as a manual. As far as to follow the guideline, we look at it with horror, and they look at it like, "Hey, this sounds pretty good. This is what we want." I guess it all comes down to motivation.
Yes, well, it's laid out for them in that book. It's laid out very clearly. And at the very end of that book, the guy who caused it all—I don't remember his name—doesn't matter. He floated off into the West in a boat because that was the plan to bring to pass the socialized country and then leave it, and that's what he did. Of course, that's not whatever really happens. Whatever really happens is the guy who did it now lives in a mansion that's bigger than any mansion you've ever thought of, and he has every slave working for him, and everything's going for him, and he doesn't care about anybody else. That's what really happens. But the book says, oh, isn't this nice? All these kind of books paint that the bad guy is a hero. Everything that's about socialism paints the bad guy as a hero. Mm. Oh, my.
That's amazing.
Again, carried away. This particular document I have here about the America heading for the trash heap, I'll send it out to people who want it just like I do the others. Just write for it. I'll send it. By the way, I've had an overwhelming response about the color of law. It's absolutely astounding the number of people who want to know about that and the Black's Law Dictionary and then want that pamphlet of 11 pages that tells them what to do when they're approached by somebody using color of law. That's had an overwhelming support. I've had to spend some time every day sending that out. I got it fixed so I can do it quickly, but my oh my, there's a lot of people who want that material.
And just to be clear, I just want to be clear with people. Last week we talked about 18 USC section 242, deprivation of rights under color of law, which is happening today. I just want to make sure everyone knows.
Yes.
Folks, write this down. 18 USC section 242. And Kevin, I know that you were hot on that as well. So
absolutely, you know, absolutely.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Richard disseminated that information for our benefit, and I've seen other people pick up on it and disseminate it for other people's benefit. And that's the key, is to getting the information out there. That's exactly what the opposition doesn't want. They don't want you to know what's going on. They don't want you to know the law. They don't want you to know your rights.
That's right. Now, this is a three-pronged package. It's a three-pronged package. Number one is saving the Constitution, that book, because that book will give you the information you need to know what the rights are and what's going on. The next prong of that is Title 18, Section 242. Know that and have it available. And the next prong are the three pages in the handout called The Outreach of Government. It's written by a judge. And that particular thing also focuses on what to do when you're approached. So the three prongs is, first, you got to know what the problem is. Second, you got to know what the law says about it. And third, you got to have a tool to make sure that you are protected. That's what it is.
Okay. Kevin.
Yes, sir.
I'm really getting carried away today. Wow.
Oh, keep it going. We love it. That's why we tune in on Wednesdays.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Doctor, this is your time. I really want, and Kevin and I were talking a little bit before the show. We really want to hear what's on your mind. Now, I know Kevin is, I don't want to say representing, but is a representation of many patriots out there with concerns. You know, you had mentioned at the beginning, Doctor, this country has been decimated, and maybe that's the wrong term, has been really hurt by all the closings, the businesses that have closed. People don't really understand. My question is, number one, is it too late? I mean, Kevin's out there with others planting flags on City Hall, you know, don't tread on me flags, and American flags saying reopen, reopen, reopen.
Yep.
You know, but is it too late, Doctor?
No. Okay. It's too late if we quit. It is not too late. I got to stress that. We've got to do these things. It's never too late. As long as there's one patriot existing in this country, it's never too late. It'll be tough to turn around the fewer there are, but it's never too late. Don't stop. Go. I mean, you don't stop a race just because you didn't pass the 30-yard line soon enough. You don't stop. You keep on going. The football team never quits until the last, well, they're not supposed to quit until the last second, even if they're behind. That's, you don't stop. You keep right on going. I really feel bad when somebody says, oh, it's too late. We can't do anything about it. Yeah, that person can't. He's saying, it's too late. I can't do anything. He can't, but the rest of us can.
That's right. Please. That's right. Yep. The one thing that we can't do is throw our hands up, and quit. You know, it's like that old saying, if you say you can or you say you can't, either way, you're right. You see what I'm saying? And, you know, what was the old saying, I have not yet begun to fight. Now, the longer this goes on, yes, the harder the battle becomes, or the more of an uphill battle it is, or at least the more work we have to do to recover this country. But this country hasn't burned down yet. This house hasn't burned down yet. There's still time to save this country, but people need to get serious and get active. And luckily, we're seeing more and more people doing it. And the more and more people that wake up, I mean, look, we have a percentage of the people who are satisfied to just sit back on the couch, do nothing, ride it out, live in fear, stay in their house. But for everybody else, they need to get active. Make those phone calls. Write those letters. Get on your governors and your mayors and your representatives. Get out there. Be vocal. If you've got a business, open it. We only have so much time to get these things turned around. I mean, think about the country being put on pause like you're holding someone's head underwater. Eventually, they're going to expire. This can only go on for just so long, but we're not at that point yet, and we need to get our head out of the water while we can, and people need to take it seriously.
The one thing about today is the enemy is very apparent. It's not hidden. It's not something that, well, I wonder what's going on. It's not hidden. It's very apparent. What we need now is people who are understanding that and willing to do something. What? Just be a part of a rally. Be a part of something. Go out and buy something on this weekend. Spend some time. Go see somebody. Help a company that's trying to stay open. Do something. But the most important thing is don't quit. Don't stay at home and don't hide behind your door saying, oh, I might get sick. Oh, oh, oh. Well, the Revolutionary War guys, they didn't stay home because they might get shot.
That's right. They went
to work.
That's right.
And we're not even going to get sick. Even the sickness is not nearly what they try to call it. You just pointed it out earlier today. It's less than the flu, folks, this sickness.
Yep.
It's less potent than the flu, yet we're scared to death and we're wearing masks and we're standing 6 feet apart. We're isolating ourselves. We're isolating our country and our businesses are closed and people are not going there because maybe they might get sick. Oh, don't worry about it. Go do something. Thank you.
Yep. Well, I'll put it to you this way, Richard. I've been to 3 rallies at our state house so far. I haven't gotten sick. And I have a good friend down in Massachusetts, Jeff Cooner, who he's a talk radio host for WRKO, and they formed a big rally down there. A few thousand people showed up on Beacon Hill. And that was over 2 weeks ago, and nobody's sick. Jeff Cooner's not sick. And on Facebook, nobody has written in having to do with that rally that has gotten sick. So explain that to me. If this is as bad as they would like us to think, you would think we'd all be dropping dead in the street right now. But I'm not seeing it.
Yes, you would. That verifies that it's a hoax, that this the seriousness of this is a hoax. The disease exists. The concept of what's going on today is a hoax. That's it's a hoax
done by the
people who want to destroy our republic.
Exactly. Well, it's a good, you know, the old saying, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. I think that's quite, quite fitting here in this particular instance, because that's exactly what people are afraid of. They're full of fear of the unknown, you know, fear that they're going to get sick, fear. And you have a media in this country that's, 80-90% against this country, just piling on the fear and pushing the propaganda and pushing the panic and trying to keep everyone in a panicked, fearful state 100% of the time. And it bothers me to no end the psychological damage that they're doing to people, just everyday people on the street. I mean, you go to the grocery store. You've talked about it, Richard. Goodness gracious, you go to the grocery store, people, they're scared to even look at you. I mean, everybody's got the plague in their mind. Everybody's got the plague. It's like, you know, everybody's got leprosy. We've become leper nation. Not me. I don't have the plague. No, everybody else has the plague. And then the next person is thinking, oh, well, not me. I don't have it. No, it's just everybody else. And they get all these different people thinking this, and they're walking around in their masks that don't do any good. And they're so fearful of one another, nobody will even get near each other and talk. And
I don't believe there's one person in our community here in Kaysville, Utah, that has this disease. Not one. But everybody's acting like everybody does. Not
like
one.
Everybody
now,
has
I
it.
Heard yeah. one person say, a couple said that, one person said that they had it, but it turns out, the way the word gets around now, that they went to the doctor and asked if they could be quarantined. And the doc says, sure, if you want to. What is he going to say? No? Anyway.
Right.
I don't believe there's one person in this entire community that has that. And if nobody does, why are we all so afraid?
Exactly. If I can toss in a few things here, a few points here, because this does
you
not
think
make
this is your show, huh?
Well, hey, you know, I'm loving this, okay? I'm actually, I love this give and take back and forth between you two. But let me just say this, what you just said. Oklahoma City Hospital, it was just recently closed. There was a hospital in Oklahoma City. Even nation's largest health systems are laying off healthcare workers amid this supposed pandemic. We're destroying hospitals in the name of fighting the coronavirus. At least that's what they call it. The Mayo Clinic is scheduled to furlough or cut the pay of some 30,000 employees. You're talking about Quest Diagnostics preparing to test for COVID, the coronavirus. Well, guess what? They're laying people off. And I was in there for a test about a month ago. And I got to tell you, I could have taken a dead cat, swung it by the tail, and whatever that saying is, and not hit anyone. You know, the four West Virginia hospitals as well lay off hundreds because of shrinking revenues, the lack of patients, the mounting casualties within the healthcare industry is just amazing. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, maybe this is, you know, how Hillary wanted to change the healthcare system. Obama wanted to change it and did. Maybe this is kind of like, I don't know. Maybe this is part of it. Go ahead.
What I think is very interesting is we have found a cure for all these diseases. Evidently, the people don't have the diseases anymore, so they don't have to go to the hospital. This virus has cured all of our diseases. I think that's outstanding. Whoops, did I say that?
It's true. But the sad thing is the patients haven't gone anywhere. They're just not being treated. They're home with not getting their cancer treatments. They're home not getting their hip replacements, not getting their knee replacements, all these other surgeries that they're saying, you know, that are being put on the back shelf for this surge that's not coming and hasn't happened and hasn't manifested. You know?
I got a whole bunch of things. I've got a whole bunch of things I need to go visit the hospital about, but they closed on me and I can't. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, they closed because they're afraid. The hospital I'm talking about is a VA hospital. It's a part of the government. So that's some of the reason.
Amazing.
Oh, you guys. We're beating a dead horse here over and over and over.
Indeed.
But how do we get the point across if we don't say something?
That's true. That's right.
Are enough people listening? Kevin, I want to ask you, the people that you see out there they know what's going on. They know that this is not right. I mean, from what you're seeing at ground level, at the ground level, I mean, are people, I mean, what are people thinking and saying? And I mean, what's going on?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on what group you talk to. I mean, it's the same with everything else. I think you could just about divide the country right in half. And, you know, you've got, you know, on one side, you've got the leftists and the snowflakes. And I see a lot of that group is falling for this hook, line, and sinker. And they're believing whatever propaganda is being pushed out on the mainstream media, whatever they see on Facebook. But, you know, that just seems to be what they buy. And then there's the other half of the population that's sitting back, shaking their head, knowing to themselves, this isn't adding up. This isn't right. Some of them won't admit it as vocally as we do. So then you kind of take that group and divide that group in half. And as half of that group is very vocal, the other half knows this is a load of garbage and is just kind of going along with it for peer pressure, as I see it. Because you do have a lot of peer pressure at work here. You know, where people are there, they're realizing to themselves, this is not adding it up. This is not what they're saying it is, but they're being quiet about it and just kind of watching. And then there's the other half of us. We're the ones that go down to the State House yelling, open this up, get this back open again. This is a load of baloney, you know. So that's kind of how I see it. I don't see much on the left as far as speaking up against this, but on the right, you've got a lot of awake people. And every day, you're getting a lot more people that are waking up. And I hear the opinions because I listen. Not only do I, you know, talk to people on the street, but I listen to a lot of local talk radio with heavy call-iners. So I get to hear the pulse of the people. I get to hear the opinions of people calling in, and I'm hearing the same thing, you know, from most people. And I listen to a lot of people calling in from the medical industry saying this is a load of bunk. We're not seeing what they're reporting in our hospitals. You know, we're not seeing the surges of people. You know, it's very interesting to watch, Doug. I think I'm pretty much seeing probably what you're seeing on the ground there in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but I'm not out among the I haven't been out among the people, and I have to say that. And I should be. I should get out from behind this microphone and do exactly what you're doing. Dr. Proctor, go ahead. Continue.
Well, I'm thinking to myself, as Kevin was talking, I understood last week, when we were talking about that last Wednesday, about your events in New Hampshire last Wednesday, that you guys were actually going to reopen no matter what the government said. Did that happen?
what was happening up in New Hampshire? We had an event this last Sunday where that it was actually a Christian organization, not really an organization. It was from the same group, Reopen New Hampshire, which was formed by Christians and a few pastors in response to Governor Sununu's closing down, but not only just closing down of the state, but closing down of churches and church services. And so what they had was protest church services on the front steps of the state house in defiance of Governor Sununu's orders. We have had some openings. Certain businesses have been able to open. I will say this, Sununu's orders, his shutdown orders on the state of New Hampshire have not been quite as draconian as some of the other states. I mean, it wasn't nothing. It was nowhere near as good as, let's say, South Dakota with Governor Kristi Noem, who didn't shut down her state. And that woman deserves a pat on the back for following the Constitution and not closing her state down. Sununu's orders were kind of a soft shutdown, maybe in comparison to what we're seeing in Massachusetts, which under Governor Baker is a very hard lockdown, and it's being extended way, way out in this long, drawn-out, four-phased program. With Governor Sununu, he kind of did the stay-home order. He locked the state down for maybe just over a month, 6 weeks or whatnot, and then he's been phasing certain things to open up. So like hairdressers can open up and certain things have been allowed to stay open that maybe in other states couldn't. Here's an example for you though. Keith Hansen, up here, in New Hampshire, one of our talk radio guys that the audience knows, had just done an interview with, a man who owns a workout center in Lebanon, New Hampshire. And it's actually the gym that Keith, works out at. And he wasn't going to be allowed to open up. And financially, he just could not afford to let it hang on any longer. And he opened up his gym in defiance of the state and basically told them in a very nice way, we're not shutting down. And if you're going to try to shut us down, you're going to have to send, you know, your people down here from the governor's office. And you're going to have to bring down police officers and cuff me up and haul me out of here because we just can't afford to shut down the business any longer. So we are starting to get some things opening, but not as fast as I'd like to see it.
Kevin, that's what I've been trying to get that paperwork out about. 242, Section 242 says that he opens, and if they bother him, show him that paperwork, show him the stuff that I talked about, and tell him we are going to take you to federal court.
Yep.
Make people know that. We've got to do that. The papers that were the instructions, the tools that have been sending out with gusto, I hope they're being sent out again and again and again, over and over again. There ought to be a chain mail here. Everybody should have that. Every store in New Hampshire should open, period.
Absolutely.
Every store
Absolutely.
In Massachusetts should open, period. And then it
will
work.
Well, you know, there's another story that I just heard this morning that actually Jeff Cooner in Boston reported on. Another, I can't remember what town he's in, and this is in Massachusetts, another business owner. And again, it was a gym. This owner, and again, Massachusetts, their lockdown is very, very draconian. For anybody who isn't familiar with what's going on in Massachusetts, Governor Baker, it's a very hard lockdown. They're going to be dead last in the nation as far as opening up if Governor Baker has his way. And this particular gym owner went to the mat and said, I'm opening up. You're going to have to come arrest me, and I don't care if you put me in jail for it. I do not care. And what they did was they got together they had to raise a little bit of money to do it. They got some lawyers. And if they arrest him for opening up, they're suing Governor Baker. They're taking him to court over it. And they have grounds to do it.
Don't go to state court. Go to federal court. Federal court. Don't go to the state court. State court will be a part of the state. Federal court.
Exactly.
Don't go to a state court.
Exactly.
Very important. By the way, I believe that if the people would stand as they should, we are the people. That is the Constitution. If the people would stand, it wouldn't matter what the governor said. The governor says
exactly.
we're going to say, well, I'm sorry, that's not legal, that's not right, that's not right, we're going to open anyway. If everybody did that, they couldn't do anything about it. The lockdown only occurs because the people do it. If the people didn't do it, it wouldn't occur. Remember
exactly.
that. It only occurs because the people do it, not because
See, and that's
the
problem, Richard, is that the people do not realize in mass that they have the power. That it is we the people, that we are a citizenry government. We are the government. These are our elected servants. And over the years, they've been able to flip the script in people's minds that these are our leaders, not our servants, and that they tell us what to do, we don't tell them what to do. But that's not the way it is. And if people knew their rights and were willing to stand up and man up and stand together, there's nothing the federal government, the state government, the county government, the town government could do, because you're standing up in mass. They don't have enough jail cells to, for all of us. If this nation of 330 plus million people would stand up and say, no, you will not do this, they're powerless to stop us.
That's right. That's what my books are all written about, by the way. How do we keep the, we got to know what the government's doing. Then we got to know how to do something about it. That's what every book I've written is about. How do we keep our freedoms? How do we keep our liberties? How do we keep our country going? Everything I write on that subject from different views, every bit of it is. We must do that. And it's the people. If the people would just do it, it'd be all right. Just like you said, there's not enough jails, there's not enough law enforcement. And if they just get Section 242 of Article of Title 18, U.S. Code Title 18, they could just show it to them and say, have a nice day, guys. If you do this to me, you've had it. For example, it says very clearly, if a person is kidnapped or attempt to kidnap, that's serious enough for a person to be put in jail in excess of 10 years.
Yep.
That's serious
yep.
enough. It's listed that way in the law. It says it in the law. Guys,
now, the kidnapping is a question for you, Richard. The kidnapping portion, could that be attributed down to being, oh, say, arrested for opening your business
yes.
and thrown in jail?
Absolutely.
Could you say, I've been kidnapped and I've been put in jail, held against my will, and that would apply to that?
Yeah, Kevin, it is that, exactly, because, you see, they don't have the authority to arrest you. Therefore, it's a kidnapping.
They don't
have the authority. It's a kidnapping. And kidnapping is one of the most serious ones on there. Kidnapping and loss of life and loss of limb and that kind of stuff. But it's there. So if you're arrested, they don't have authority to do it. They're hauling you off. That's a kidnapping. You've got a case. 242 outlines exactly what's supposed to happen. There's no question. It's in the law. It is in the law. Title 18.
That's right. Again, folks, USC 18 or 18 USC section 242. It's going to be in the program description notes at HagmanReportLive.com. If I see another question in YouTube, where's the link? Go to HagmanReportLive.com. End of story. By the way, we're talking about, thanks, Kevin, for laughing. People don't listen? Okay.
That's right.
Here's the book that really everyone needs to get. It is Saving the Constitution, Dr. Richard Proctor. The link is Provis Institute. Yesterday, I was talking about Contraland, the movie. Man, 100,000. I want 100,000 views on that movie. Well, I'll tell you what. I want 100,000 books of Saving the Constitution. I really believe that if you're listening, look, I don't know. I guess, Eric the Tech, we got like 165,000 or so subscribers. I mean, we're being throttled back on that. The real number would be more of a quarter of a million. But that aside, if everyone listening to this bought this book and read it and understood what our rights are, I'm going to tell you something. Your world would be a lot different. You'd be looking at things a lot differently today. Saving the Constitution, ProvisInstitute.com. The link will be in the program description box. Get it. And Dr. Proctor, continue if you want to on 242. One thing I wanted to tell you. Something happened in Corey. I mentioned this earlier, which is a town just south of where I sit. The mayor of Pennsylvania, Wolf, he's and the county executive, I won't say any more than that. Of course, you know, draconian measures as well. So this restaurant in Corey decides to open. And, man, they had a whole bunch of people in this restaurant. Against, of course, the edicts of these people.
Yes.
The restaurant was just filled. And now Corey people, you don't mess with them. They got the, you know, they're kind of beefy and they got the guns and the pickup trucks and you know what I'm talking about, right? You know.
Sounds like New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Sounds just like New Hampshire.
That's right. Good old boys. You know what I got to tell you, you know what happened though? And this woman who owned the restaurant said, I don't care. And they enjoyed a robust business. Well, she closed. You know why she closed? Because, well, nothing else worked. Her employees were getting death threats. People were threatening to kill her employees. And she said, didn't expect that. So out of an abundance of caution.
Well, you see now they're threatening to kill them, but these are the people that are just, what are they doing? They're just standing around trying to find. They're the snitchers. They're the ones who are trying to. They don't care about the country. They care about, oh, well, the media said this and the media said that, so we better believe that because the media said it. And so if you go there, you're going to get me sick. I'm shoot you if you're going to get me sick. I had a lady respond to me that way in the post office when I was walking out, and she said, where's your mask? And I said, I'm not wearing one, and you don't need to either. Get out of here. And she made sure she wasn't standing close to me. Oh, dear me. She was afraid she would have taken a knife to me or something like that if she'd have had it, because that's her attitude. I am going to prevent you from doing these things. Now, I can't say if the people around the employees are so bad, maybe we have to go to work in mass. Okay, maybe that's how we have to do. But, of course, you can't stay in mass all the time. I can't believe the problems that we are creating. We, the people, are creating for ourselves because we will not believe that we are a honest, true country. We've got to do what the media and the government says. We have no options. We must. No, you don't. You must do what the Constitution says. That's what you must do. And what the Declaration of Independence says. That's what you must do.
Well, Leonard Richard, they've worked very hard to foster a people in this country that will not think for themselves, will not look at something and analyze it for themselves. They're literally fed sound bites. They're fed, and I think social media has had a huge effect on this, especially with Facebook. They're believing whatever they're fed. And you know, I will say this: the Marxist communist left has done a very good job through the central banks, because this is where a lot of the funding comes from, of hijacking the media in this country and owning about 90% of it to feed nothing but false propaganda to the American people, to where at the end of the day they don't know what to believe, and they will believe whatever they see on mainstream media, because if it was said on the news, then it must be true. Oh, if they said it on Channel 9 News, it must be true. And this is, you know, they're not looking at it things objectively. They're not, the critical thinking skills are completely gone in these people. And that makes me sad, because 40 years ago it wasn't that way. 100 years ago it wasn't that way. You could walk up to a man 100 years ago on the street and you could talk about what was going on, and everybody read the paper and they stayed, you know, and not that propaganda didn't exist back then. It did. But people were informed and could think for themselves and think logically and had, oh, what was this thing we used to have? Common sense. And these days, with so much of the American public, not all of it, but a good portion, common sense has gone right out the window.
Yes, you know, Kevin, the things you're talking about weren't in the past. Let's wander back to 1920s, early 1920s, when J.P. Morgan, who was the agent for the Rothschild organizations, J.P. Morgan sent out his people to find out what they had to do to buy the news. And they found that if you just bought 22 or 23 different news locations, they could then control the news completely. So a guy that worked with the inquiry groups, Walter Lippmann, you guys all know Walter Lippmann.
Yes.
He wanted to be a part of the CFR, and they said, no, Walter, you stay where you are, and you funnel the news. And he did that. And then and Alan Drury wrote a book about that and showed how wonderful Walter controlled the world. And he was controlled by the people behind the scenes. I call them the international banking establishment. Those kinds of things occurred. All that's in my books, by the way. The Liberty Series covers all of this in detail. These things happened because people had the money to buy us, to buy buy the news, buy the politicians, and buy everybody. It's all money-oriented. That's what's going on. And that's why the people are the way they are. They're afraid. They don't know. No critical thinking, like you said, Kevin. None of those things. It just, we're a bunch of fish in a barrel being shot because we won't get out of the barrel. We're like the frog who's put in the warm water and then boiled to death. Folks, we've got to do something. We've got to get back. Parents my age, you guys know, get out and teach somebody. Do something. Help. Buy these books and give them to your kids and tell them to come to your house and sit down and read them. Make sure they do. I don't know what to say. Sounds draconian on this side too, but we've got to do something. We can't. We can't go on.
Well, and the thing, Richard, is that there is something that everybody can do. I mean, I think some folks, especially with some older folks, they feel I'm old, I'm sickly, I'm not well. Yes, I think all this, but what can I do? And there is things that you can do. Look at Richard. You're a perfect example of this. How old are you? If you don't
79,
mind me asking you,
slowed down.
You've got one little bit, and you're turning out books and knowledge and waking people up, and you're doing something to great effect. And there's something that everybody can do, even if it's a little bit. Take action. Get creative. Come up with something. Put a sign in your front yard. You know, I mean, it's something
but
to wake people up.
Everybody go support the businesses that are trying to stay open. Go support them.
Yes.
Everybody. That's the most important thing. If they open their doors and nobody goes there, it didn't do them any good. Everybody go support the businesses. Everyone can do that. We did it before. We did it before January the 1st of this year. Let's do it now. Go support the businesses. If people are clamoring for you to be there, perhaps they'll even open. Perhaps if you call your barbershop and say, I want to get a haircut, he says, well, I'm closed. Why? I want a haircut. Go down there, store, and open it. If people did those kinds of things, maybe stuff would happen. Guys, we've got every little bit works. I mean, a breeze is composed of a lot of different atoms, and it creates a wind and creates a tornado. Just a lot of individual little atoms in the wind. And look what it does. Well, let's get the individual people doing the same thing.
And you know what, Richard? Courage is great. Courage is contagious. And when you stand up and you're willing to stand up and make a point, it gives other people the courage to stand up. Because I think there's a lot of people out there that want to stand up, but don't quite feel brave enough to do it, or they think that they're going to be the only one standing. And my point is, be brave enough to be the only one standing, and there are people around you that want to stand that will see you standing and draw from that example, and you'll give them the courage to stand up too.
That's what the second part of the third part, the tool, is: standing tall in government overreach. Standing tall. Let's do something. Standing tall. Yes, that also... The information that I've been sending out about the color of law tells them, helps them know what they can do and how to do what they can do.
Okay.
Yes.
I've got two emails. I think I'm going to interject right now, Dr. Proctor, because what you just said, this fits. This comes from an attorney who I've known probably for 25 years. I haven't seen personally, in a while, but she said, I caught your program last week with Dr. Richard Proctor. I want to let you know that 18 USC 242 is the missing link that people need to have and need to understand. Thank you so much for reminding me about this. She said, P.S. Everyone, tell everyone that they should buy saving the Constitution. Now, I did not add that. That was not me. That was her saying that. Now, this is an attorney saying that about this book, Saving the Constitution. So, Marcy, thank you so much, and I appreciate you listening. It's been a long time. I owe you lunch, I know. So, Saving the Constitution, Provost Institute. Now, here's a second email I got. Provost Institute, Saving the Constitution. I just want to make sure people know that, okay? Please, folks, get hold of this book as well as others there. This is a second email. Here it is right here. With respect to 18 U.S.C. 242, I understand that it's not legal to infringe upon my rights. What do you say if you live in a small town, there are, and this, by the way, is from someone in Pennsylvania, and there are at most 5 stores, meaning grocery stores, where this person gets supplies, and they all require you to wear masks, and you've tried to enter all 5 stores and they without a mask, and they won't let you in. I'm paraphrasing. I'm just kind of summarizing this. This person does not want their name used. So what happens when you
you're mixing up government and business? The business wants you to wear a mask to be able to shop there. Then you should.
Okay.
I mean, they have a right to their private property just the same as you have a right to yours. I mean, I don't think they should, but they have a right.
Well, I mean, from this email, these stores are responding to this, because this email comes from Pennsylvania, actually just a town about 20 miles from where I sit, saying that, look, the Pennsylvania is requiring, this person writes, it's a law. Pennsylvania made a law that, you know, we all must wear masks until further notice. And this person can't go into any store understanding their rights. This person can't go into any store, but you're saying.
Well, now, just a minute now. Oh, wait a second. I understand what you just said. You add another piece to the puzzle. They're doing it because the government made a law. Well, the government didn't. They made an ordinance.
Right.
Even if they made a law, you take that 242 stuff and you go there and point it out to them. Maybe these people will understand there is no law, and maybe they would do differently then.
Interesting.
Yep. See, that's the thing that people have to realize, Doug, is that these aren't laws; these are edicts. You know, these are orders coming down from the governor. They're not laws. They were never put through the legislature. They've never been voted on, because if they had, at that point, they could be challenged. It's not a law. Now, when it comes to a private business can ask you to do anything they want. So, let's say you've got 5 grocery stores in town. It's kind of similar to our area, and all 5 grocery stores demand, you know, that you wear a mask. Well, it's their store, it's their private property, they own the business, they can ask you to do that. If they suggest that you do it, okay, fine, then you don't have to because it was a suggestion, but if they demand that. Now, let's say you had 1 store out of the 5 that didn't demand, they asked that you comply, would you please wear one, and the other 4 demanded, then you vote with your dollars and you go to that 1 store that,
that doesn't require it, right?
Kevin, that's exactly how it's done. Walk with your dollars. Yes.
Yep. Yep, exactly. But if all 5 are demanding it, then you got it. Well, that's just, you know, it's kind of falls in with no shirt, no shoes, no service kind of a thing. You know, it's their policy. You got to follow up, but it's not the law. You know what I mean? It's not the law in the book. So it's important that mentally we distinguish the two. You know.
Now here's a question I ask. Now I don't know the environment. I don't know the geography. But if a person is in a location, in a city, a town, small town, and all 5 are going to require it. How far away is the next town one that doesn't require it?
Well, in this case, it would have to, all of Pennsylvania. I'm not sure about Ohio, but, it might be a trek, doctor.
Might be, huh? In Utah, it is a trek. You might have to go 50 miles.
Yes.
But I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. Back east.
Okay.
Yeah, of course, back east here, our towns are a lot closer together than they are out in Utah and Colorado and Nevada and areas like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you mean by quite a trek. Well, I don't know what that does. Quite a trek mean 10 miles or does it mean 20? I don't know.
Well, the majority of the stores, this is again, and folks, when you send me an email that you don't want your name or certain information, read over the air, please, have mercy on me. Okay. It's hard for me to parse through the stuff that you don't want read, but where this person is at, I won't even give the town's name, but where this person is at is, it's a small town. It's very rural. You'd have to go 20 miles to my city. You'd have to probably go 15 miles into the state of Ohio, which has got laws, or not laws, which the governor is
edicts.
Thank you. You got to wear a mask and such. But where are you going to go, you know, without calling on the phone saying, hey, can I come in without a mask? You know, where are you going to go? So I don't even know how to answer that question.
Perhaps then the answer is the way I said it the first time. Take the material about 242 and go to the owner of the store or the manager of the store and point out the law, the federal law, Title 18, the federal law says that they cannot do that or they're liable for punishment. Take that to him. Say, now look, this is a color of law. This is not a law. This is color of law. And point it out. Let him read it and discuss it with him. Maybe if they had that kind of an input, they would open their store to suggestion, not requirement.
Right.
I love that. To suggestion, Kevin, not requirement. That's very, very good. And yes, yes. All right. Doctor, I didn't mean to divert you, whatever topic you wanted to talk about today. There was just so much, you know, it just seems like there's so much going on all over the place. And people are getting so go ahead. Whenever you want to.
This is today's topic. We haven't gone off topic. This is today's topic. It's the most important thing going today is knowing that law. Again, it's back to knowledge, isn't it? It's back to knowing. You can't do anything if you don't know it. That's why saving the Constitution is so important, because that helps you know. Then the law, now you know what you can do because you know what the law says and you know what your rights are. Now you can go to that store and say, guy, you know, you can do it. It's your private property. But do you really want to keep all these people out when they're living the Constitution correctly? Do you really want to do that? I mean, there's lots of things to talk about.
And if enough of customers spoke up to that manager, voicing their disapproval of it, that store would eventually relent and say, okay, we suggest you wear them, but we're not going to demand it, you know, because look, you're their customer base. Without you, they don't have a business. You know, you're the reason for being there.
And everybody that's going in there doesn't want to wear one. They just feel they're compelled to. So if those people who feel compelled to knew what their rights were from the book and they knew what the law was, they could help that gentleman know what to do.
Amen. Kevin, your perspectives on what you're seeing and anything more with the fine Dr. Richard Proctor? I just want to, one more thing. ProvisInstitute.com. Folks, commit that to memory. Write it down. Bookmark it. ProvisInstitute.com. It is so very important, especially today. And please, please, saving the Constitution. If you do nothing else, that book is so critically important, and I've gotten so much out of it. Saving the Constitution. Order yours today. Go ahead, Kevin. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, not at all. And I would like to back up what you're saying. I have a copy of Saving the Constitution. You really do need to get this book. You need to understand what your rights are. And the thing is that with this book, the way Richard has laid things out, he not only explains to you what your rights are, but it teaches you how to understand it. It's one thing to know your rights. It's another thing to really understand what your rights are and what they mean. And he's done an exceptional job laying it out in this book. And it's a real pleasure to read. I'm about halfway through it. I'm still working on it. And I've learned so much just in this. And as soon as I get done reading it, I'm going to turn it over and I'm going to reread it again. It's a fabulous book. Folks, it's a great place to start. Start with this one book and then go from there. You will learn so much. And you know what? As an American citizen, it is your duty to know what your rights are. This is your birthright. This is your children's birthright. This is your grandchildren's birthright. People died and bled to give you these rights and to protect these rights so that you could have them. And it's up to you, now that you have this mantle, to understand it and protect it. And you can't protect it if you don't understand it. And you can't protect your rights if you don't know what they are. So please buy the book. It's $20. It's a small investment. And Richard is so good to cover the shipping and handling to get it shipped out to you. And he gets it right out within a few days. I know we've been experiencing some problems in shipping. That's beyond anything that's beyond Richard's control. I think there's a lot of people out there that don't want you getting this information, folks. And that ought to tell you something, you know, right there. Do you want to talk to Richard?
Kevin, the worst case we've had is 39 days and this book still hasn't been delivered to him.
Yeah.
And I sent him a copy of the tracking stuff to show him it's going in circles. It's going around and about. It's sitting idle. It's just sitting in distribution points. Everything they can do. 39 days. Yep. He still doesn't have his book. None of them are lost. They all arrived. But you have to wait. Some of them you have to
wait
for.
That seems a little suspicious to me. And, you know, anybody who's involved in the independent media, which is the real media, the truth media in America, has experienced the exact same thing in other ways. This is just more opposition, in my opinion, to being able to get the truth out to people. Because that Constitution is the truth. And Richard goes over the Constitution as originally written, not as interpreted. He goes back to the original document and breaks down the original document and puts it in very, very plain English for you to understand. This is what it says, and this is what it means. And let me show you why it means that. And it's an incredible book to study. It's a really, really good book. So my praise and applause to you, Richard, for writing it. Thank you for doing that for us. I'd say you're a great American for doing, but really you're just an American for doing it. This is something that the founders would have expected from all of us, you know. And this generation right here and now needs to know this document because our grandparents knew that document and our great grandparents knew that document. They knew what their rights were. And the left in this country has worked feverishly. I mean, 16 hours a day while we're all doing our thing, these folks are working hard to dumb this nation down, and it starts right there with that single document, okay? And I'd like to add a little something in on our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our Declaration of Independence. I agree with Richard that these are very godly inspired documents. And I've been saying this to friends for years, and I think some of my Christian friends would kind of scratch their head when I would say that. And I want you to think about this. What's the one thing in this world that stands and has stood in the way of the New World Order? And I think we all know that that's America. And what is America based on? What is our foundation based on? Our system of government and our country is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence. And we know that the New World Order is a very satanic organization. And the one thing that's standing in the way of that is that piece of paper right there and those rights that God laid out for us. And I think that's proof in a nutshell that that is a very godly inspired document. You know,
well,
and that's
sir.
A gift. That's a gift to us from the Lord. And that's something that he gave to us and expects us to honor and uphold and protect. You know, that's something that the Lord gave to this nation. And we can take this all the way back to the Mayflower Compact when the pilgrims came here and made a compact with God on the land itself and came into covenant with God over the land here. And I think we need to keep that in mind, that the Lord has blessed us mightily, and it's up to us to protect it as each individual citizens. And there's something each one of us can do. Even if you think it's something small, it all adds up. Take it away, Richard, if you've got anything to add to that.
Well, you did an excellent job. I believe that absolutely those men were raised up at that time to do that task, and they did it. Now we need to do our part in this day, because we've been placed here to do our part now. And those of us who want to have this country survive just need to do a few things that are focused on keeping us going, keeping it happening. We've got to hold government in check. By the way, you all know government is force. Government isn't benevolent. Government is force. So
yep,
the Constitution was built to give us a tool to keep the government's force in check. And that's what it's all about, guys. We just need to keep it in force, in check.
That quote was actually from George Washington. Government is force. And if people could look at that, you know, what was it? Oh gosh, I'm drawing a blank on. It's a fearful servant and a dangerous servant and a fearful master.
Yeah, something like that. Yes, I got you right. Yes.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Yes. And it must be kept in check. You know, because look, human nature. You got to realize that the founders. Okay, these men were very scholarly. These men knew world history. I mean, these were very, very well learned men. They were well studied. They had studied the empires right up until that point. They knew world history. They knew the propensity of government. They knew even more so the propensity of human nature, and that human nature is sinful and fallen, and if not kept in check, it would lead to corruption and wanting to gain more power and more power. You know, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So when they devised this document, through much debate, oh Lord, would I have loved to have been a fly on the wall during the debates between these men when they were hammering out these founding documents, to be able to create a system of government that handcuffed the government, that put checks and balances and walls around the government to keep it from getting out of control and becoming the monster and the octopus that it's turned into these days. And if you look back, look at how they've tried to undermine the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and the ways that they've done it to unleash government. And what this was a leash on government. It doesn't give you your rights. It recognizes them. What it is a prohibition on government to be able to take those rights away.
Yep, that's in a nutshell. That's exactly what it is. And I would add one more thing to the accolades you gave to the founders. They were spiritual, God-fearing men who prayed and believed in the Creator and the creation. They were Christian people. And all these people that want to destroy them are trying to tell us that they were something else. And, oh, they're bad. Oh, they did this. They did this. They weren't perfect men, but they were inspired to do what they did, and they were raised up at that time to do it. I would be afraid, absolutely afraid, if we tried to do the same thing today with the people that would wind up at that place today.
Amen.
I would be scared to death of that.
These were men of high morals. I mean, high spiritual fortitude. I actually have a picture on the wall that's hanging over me right now. And Richard and Doug, I'll bet you're familiar with this picture. It's called the Prayer at Valley Forge, and
yes,
it's a picture of George Washington. He's got his horse next to him. There's probably 10 inches of snow on the ground, and he's down on his knees, on one knee, praying to the Lord over the battle. And it was such an inspiring picture to see what would be the father of our country on his knees before our Almighty Father, and humbling himself before them.
A little history about that, Kevin. A little history. The only reason we know about that is because a farmer was out doing some work in the field and saw him and went home and told his wife. That is the only reason we know about that. That man told people, and someone drew, an artist painted that picture. And that picture represents exactly what Washington's life was like. We are indebted to that farmer for what he saw and did and said.
Didn't I read that in the Liberty series, or am I mistaken? That what you just said.
Oh, it's in the Liberty series. Yes, it is.
That's what I thought.
It's in volume 6.
That's what I thought. Okay. I've got an email here that was sent by a Kevin, not you, Kevin. unless you're okay, but
it could be.
No, actually, this is Kevin from Florida wanting to know something from Dr. Proctor. Actually, it's two questions, and with a P.S. and the P.S. The P.S. is easy. P.S. I'm ordering your book. So hurry up and do it. Okay. Question number one, and you could take this in any order, or dismiss whatever. Question number one, I had touched on this at the beginning of the show, the lack of, justice that we're seeing from the Justice Department of Justice. Is there anything in the Constitution? Here's the essence of it. Is there anything in the Constitution that would prohibit or prevent the current Department of Justice from prosecuting, investigating, or prosecuting any former president or cabinet official or any other government official at the cabinet level position for crimes of sedition like we've seen with Obamagate? That's question one. I'll just hang on to that thought. In question number two, certainly you've heard of the possibility of the requirement for everyone to be vaccinated. We talked about this last week. Kevin, were you listening? Okay. Is there anything in the Constitution that would require, is there anything in the Constitution that would require, any citizen in the United States to take a vaccine, if it was contingent upon the general public health? That's the essence of the questions.
Yeah, let's do the second one first. The Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. This says the right of the people to not receive vaccinations if they feel that it's unreasonable to give it to them. Period. That's what that says. Right of the people to be secure in their persons. Okay. Now the next one, is there anything in the Constitution that says that a guy can't be gotten after? No, they're citizens. The minute they're not in their office, they're citizens. And everybody is subjected to the law of the land. Everybody. It says it right there in Article 6. The Constitution is the law of the land. I really chuckle about Article 6 because everybody, the Supreme Court doesn't know what it says. But it says right here in paragraph 2, this Constitution and the laws of the land which shall be made in pursuant, which means in accordance with it. So the Constitution's first, then the laws of the land that agree with what the Constitution says, and all treaties which shall be made or under the authority of the United States. And what's the authority of the United States? The Constitution and the laws of the United States. So if a treaty is written in accordance with the Constitution and the laws, then it is accepted and everybody's supposed to follow that treaty. But if it isn't written according to the Constitution and according to the laws, then it's null and void. And that goes on. This is the supreme law of the land. Article 6, very clear. The Constitution. And the Constitution does not prohibit any citizen from being taken to court for a crime or a misdeed or a misdemeanor or anything like that. We just need to be careful about the word treason, because the word treason is directly related to war. But we could say we're in a war of words, so therefore treason would come up. Anyway, those are definitions.
Now, Richard, I understand the point of treason, as the Constitution lays out, it has to be at a time of war. What about sedition, though? Or is it the exact same meaning? Or is it just another word for treason?
I think it's a little different, sedition a little different, but the it's really close together. They're really close. I'm not the attorney or the English major that would be able to say exactly the difference between those two words. But the point is that you can be punished for crimes that you commit, whether you committed them, as long as you're not outside the time of limitation, you know that. But, in other words, Hillary Clinton and Obama could be taken to court and put in jail. Is that clear enough? If we would just do it.
If we just do it. Amen to that.
Yep. If our politicians just had the will to do what they should be doing and then carry out the law.
Yep, that's right. And Congress, if they would be willing to carry out the law. Did you know that the Constitution gives Congress the right to tell the Supreme Court what it can do and what it can't? Absolutely. Supreme Court can't do anything that Congress tells them it can't do, period.
Really? Hey, wait a second. Say that again.
Supreme Court can't do anything that the Congress says it cannot do. It says it right here. In all cases, this is in paragraph 2, section 2, article 3. In all cases, kind of all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, comma, both as to law and fact, comma, with exceptions, and under such regulations as Congress shall make. So Congress can choose exceptions and regulations and control the Supreme Court. So that's the last line in paragraph 2 of section 2, article 3.
Wait a minute. Article 3.
Yep.
Okay. So, in practice, boy, we've got a bunch of gutless
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
It's right there in the words.
And you can see how that's designed to put the people above the Supreme Court, because the Congress, especially the House, is supposed to be the representative of the people.
Yes, that's the order. That's the order. You're exactly right. Congress is the people. The legislature is the people, and the states, the Senate, the representatives are the people, and the Senate is the states. Both of those, and the states are the people too, but it's two times removed. But bottom line, the people can tell the Supreme Court what it can do and not do if the Congress, Congress guys would just do what they're supposed to do. That was a mouthful.
Okay, I lost that again. Article 3.
Article 3, section 2, paragraph 2. Last line.
Last line.
Exceptions and regulations given to them by Congress. So Congress, let's just take an example, a perfect example of this. There was no law allowing homosexuality in our country. The Supreme Court violated the laws that the regulations, laws, exceptions, whatever that Congress made, and turned it on topsy-turvy and decided it was okay to do it. But the Supreme Court violated the regulations and the laws of Congress to do it. But nobody paid attention, because all the laws in the whole country were against it when they passed that thing, when they made that decision. And that decision is against the Congress and the laws of Congress. And so what happened? Congress said, oh, okay, I guess you're right. We better do that because you said it, because you're the lawmaking body. Oh, no, they're not the lawmaking body. I think the lawmaking body is Article 1, Section 1. It says all legislative powers are granted in the Congress, and that doesn't say the president with executive orders, and that doesn't say the Senate, the Supreme Court with decisions, and that doesn't say the regulatory agencies in the executive department with their rules. It says legislative powers are vested in the Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House. Very, very clear. I don't know why we have so much trouble with these things. It's as clear as can be.
I'll say this, and then, Kevin, I'll turn it to you. Folks, look, I can't afford 535 copies of this book to be sent out to members of Congress, but I can afford one, and that's to my representative. Actually, two. Two senators and my representative. I think I'm going to send them this book, and I'm going to do that. And you know what? I think everyone should do that. We can't make them read it, but we certainly can make them look at it. What's that?
You can tell them to
really
read it.
That's a really good idea. I think I need to send a copy of this to Governor Sununu.
Really?
I think I need to send a copy of this to our governor. That's a fantastic idea, Doug.
You know, I want to drive it down to his office. Actually, I can. And say, look, you need to read this. You need to read this book.
If enough people said that, they might have actually opened the cover.
Mm.
Telling you, saving the Constitution, it's well worth it. Wow.
That'd be great if 100 of those books showed up on their doorstep.
Yeah.
Didn't we just now talk about two little sentences in the Constitution that people really aren't very much aware of? Just two little sentences?
Yeah. I had to read
them. They're right there. Yeah, they're right there. Do you know another little sentence that nobody knows that would be very interesting at this point? New subject, but another little sentence. Article 5, last two lines. It's talking about amendments to the Constitution. And it says, provided that no amendment, okay, see, provided that no amendment which shall be made prior to 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article. That's slavery, folks. That's what that's about. That's about slavery. And 1808 was the day they agreed to change slavery. So that's why those dates came up. And that's why that was said. Then there's a semicolon. And that's important because a new phrase. So we could say, provided that no amendment, no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate, which means in our language, no state will lose its representative in the Senate, which means that the Senate will still be a part controlled by the states, governors, legislatures. Very clear. Very last line. That line right there voids the 17th Amendment. Voids it. Voids it. It's right there. Right in the book.
Huh.
Kevin, guys, it's all in the book.
Kevin, can I be your study buddy?
Okay. Sure. Come on over. Right. I'll throw a couple steaks on the barbie while we still can.
So the 17th Amendment, of course, is...
screws around with Article 1.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's the amendment that changed how our senators work as far as the senators that are sent from the states to Washington, D.C.
Oh, yes, it would. You know, the philosophy, a little philosophy here, guys. We haven't got many minutes. It's only just a few. A little philosophy. In the days of yore, back in the 1800s, okay, back in the 1800s, when the people wanted something from the government, they would go to their representatives and they would say, I want this and I want that and I want the other. Now the representatives wanted to be elected. So they would go and they would pass a law giving those things to the people, having the government give those things to the people. Then they'd send that law to the House, to the Senate. Remember, all laws to do with money originate in the House. And this is the reason that everything they ask the government to do costs money. So the law originates in the House about money. Now they send that to the Senate. Now in the 1800s, the Senate looked at that. The senators looked at it and says, just a minute. It says in Article 1 that the direct taxes will be paid by the states. If I do that and the state therefore gets more direct taxes because I do that, then they'll fire me because I'm not elected. I'm appointed by the state. They'll fire me, so I won't pass it. And there was a check on budgets. There was a check on spending. The guy's people wanted it, but it was unconstitutional. But they still asked for it because people do that. And so the House guy wanting to be elected put it into the law. The law guys, they sent it to the Senate. The Senate said, if we do that, it'll cost money. I'll lose my job because the state doesn't want to pay that money. I won't pass it. So then the House guys went back and said, look how bad the senators are because they won't do that for you. So when it came time in 17 for the people to take the Senate under control and destroy that part of the Constitution and destroy the budget of the country and destroy the accounting system, they were talked into passing the ratifying the 17th Amendment, which should never have been written because it's not constitutional at all. And since it changes the Constitution, it's void and it's null and void because it's a contract. It's been altered by the amendment. An amendment can't alter a contract. Whew. Is that enough?
Wow. You really cleared that up, Richard.
Wow.
A state legislature could nullify the 17th Amendment in their state if they wanted to. Just use the Constitution and nullify it. Even though it's been ratified, it can be nullified because it's illegal. It's against the Constitution.
Each state could individually do that.
Yes, each state could individually do it. You don't have to ask any. They could nullify the 17th Amendment. Or they could nullify the 16th, too, for the same reason. But anyway, we're talking about the 17th. They could nullify the 17th Amendment if they just would, and they could begin to appoint their senators for the next time. The guys that are there, you could leave unless they were violating the Constitution. Then you fire them, bring them home, and put someone in their place. The states have that power given to them by the Constitution. Do it. It's there. Do it.
Wow. I got to tell you something. Eric just whispered in my ear, do you know you got 3 minutes? I'm thinking, I thought we had like
another hour. Doug.
I can't believe how quickly this time has gone. Dr. Proctor, I want to thank you so very much for your gift of time again today. We covered a lot of ground. I was just looking at the sheet I keep for each program, and fantastic, a lot of information. Folks, I want to just make sure everyone has the ability to go to provisinstitute.com. That's provisinstitute.com. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. See this book right here? Okay, buy one, buy two, buy five, send one to your rep, send one to your, just folks, above all, buy it. If you're listening to this broadcast and you haven't read it, read it, because I got to tell you, just like you saw me earlier, I mean, that was not play acting. I was actually stymied by the two sentences there. I read it, but I guess I didn't really read it the way I should. So you can spend some time mulling this book over and studying the book. So that and every other book at provisinstitute.com. And Dr. Richard Proctor is the guy. And hey, if you have any questions for him, send them to me or go to provisinstitute.com and fill out the contact form. And Kevin, a patriot, a patriotic American guy who's been out there planting flags and saying, you know what, ain't going to take it anymore. I want to say thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You guys can.
We had a good time today, Kevin. I enjoyed it.
That was a fantastic roundtable. Absolutely. I always enjoy our conversations.
Yeah, my table doesn't even round, but we still had it. Right.
That's right. That's right. And thank you for having us, Doug. Thanks for putting this on today. I really appreciate it. And I hope the Hagman audience got a lot out of it.
I got a lot out of it. And I know Eric, the tech, he was yipping in my ear saying, this is good stuff. And folks, you know what? Support. Go ahead.
Guys, I just have a good time. You see me grinning. I just have a good time. I enjoy life.
I enjoy having you folks, Doctor, you here, and Kevin, of course. It's fun when we talk both on and off air. So I appreciate both of you. Thank you so very much for all you do. And I love your sweater again, Dr. Proctor. It's a great, great looking sweater. So appreciate that. Doctor, until next week, thank you so very much.
Take care.
All right. Kevin, thank you, my friend. All right. Kevin Fahey, patriot extraordinaire. I'm telling you. Folks, tomorrow, Steve Quayle. It's not that I forgot. I was looking at Eric the Tech doing something there, and I'm not sure what exactly he was doing, but I didn't know if I should duck or not. But Steve Quayle tomorrow. Possibly with Daniel Holdings, I'm not sure, but definitely Steve Quayle. Even if Steve and I just have a discussion, he's going to be on tomorrow. We've got a lot of things to talk about. In fact, I spoke with him today about some things, and there's a lot of things taking place that we need to make sure that everyone is kind of preparing for. So Steve Quayle tomorrow. And the Man Cow is going to be coming on the Hagman Report here soon. I don't know whether you caught him on Collector's Corner. I'm not sure where that broadcasts. I think it's on cable or whatever, but he was the subject of one of those. But he has a popular radio show in Chicago and, of course, a friend of Ted Brewer's. So I'm not sure when that's going to take place, but we're arranging the schedule on that. And, again, my thanks to Dr. Richard Proctor. Go to provisinstitute.com. That is P-R-O-V, like Victor, I-S, institute.com. And order Saving the Constitution, as well as all of his other books. So gracious to come on. And, folks, don't forget Contraland. Contralandmovie.com. If you haven't done so already, put it up on social networking. Share it. It's free to watch. Go to Brighteon or go to YouTube or go to Hagman Report Live. .com. You'll find the links there, okay, as well as the video. So that's HagmanReportLive.com and Brighteon. Watch Contraland and make sure you spread it across social networking. God bless everyone. Until tomorrow night, have a great night. Good night.